in our study of Messiah in the Old Testament, we're on week 15, and your handout says the cause of the global flood, and it's the 19th of May. But I pray that we're seeing in our study of Messiah in the Old Testament that we see judgment, we see death, but there's always hope. There's always the promise. Richard?
And then you think of Methuselah, his name was widely known by the people. His death shall bring, that is widely known. You think that they had a heads up that a flood could happen?
There was a heads up about names,
yeah.
You know, and God changing the name of Abram to Abraham. Jacob's name was changed to Israel. Sarai became Sarah. And if you are if you are Naomi and Elimelech and you name your kids sickly and pining away, there's got to be a reason for it, you know. So I do believe that that there was cognizance of it. And when we think of Methuselah, as I mentioned last week, 969 years, he's the oldest man that we have on record in the Bible as living. And his name meaning his death shall bring it, that was God's mercy. When Methuselah died, that's the year the flood occurred. That was God's mercy. Isn't that beautiful? We learn so much about God in any study that we're doing in the Bible. That's why I was happy, really thankful that we got to have the series on the glory of God. And that was just too short, actually. You might not have thought so, but and I still believe that every study takes into account the glory of God. So we're once again, as we come to the chapter on the flood, we're once again talking about judgment and death, but God's grace prevails. And just like we saw in the message of the names last week from Genesis and Adam's lineage, there's that promise, there's that hope. And this is your first paragraph, I believe, on your handout. Knowing our Creator's love for us, and with great hope that's proclaimed in Genesis 3:15. Yeah, there was a curse on the earth, there was judgment on man and woman, but there was a promise of the seed of the woman, the one who would restore us from sin, the one who would deal with sin. So knowing this, God's love and the hope that he's given us, we come to the flood of judgment, and you're supposed to smile at that. Oh, I mean, that sounds wacky, doesn't it? With that great hope and that love in mind, because this flood, and I believe it's underlined in your handout, was a unique, global, catastrophic flood. It was an act of divine judgment against a sinful world. So some people say, okay, so where's the love and where's the hope? So, and why such a catastrophic flood? A flood that would destroy the entire earth, the entire creation of God, save 8 people and selected animals and the land, the earth remained, okay? But let's consider, I want us to look at Job 38:7 for 2 reasons that I'm not going to tell you, only one about. We're considering God's majesty and his love for his creation. We in Job 38:1 to 7, and this is after Job defended his righteousness. And God asked Job, "Where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? Tell me, if you have understanding, who determined its measurements? Surely you know. Or who stretched the line upon it? To what were its foundations fastened? Or who laid its cornerstone?" God continues to ask Job these questions. And then says in verse 7, "When the morning stars sang together, and all the sons of God shouted for joy." Oh, have you ever read that verse? Okay. But the morning stars and the sons of God, this was the angelic realm that rejoiced when God laid the foundations. Okay, so I wanted us to read that. But the flood seems so drastic. Don't we still hear people saying that? The flood just seems so drastic. You might have wondered why God flooded the entire earth. but again, as I said before, rescued 8 people and some animals, and that the land wasn't destroyed. There are many, including, and Craig can attest to this, including believers, evangelical believers, who do not take the flood seriously. They don't understand the global flood, and they are saying, you know, what's the moral lesson that we, many are saying, what's the moral lesson that we can learn from this? So they're not highlighting truth with the flood, and that gets frustrating, because if that is diminished, then other things get diminished.
It circumvents the message of the rest of the Bible.
Of the rest of the Bible, yeah. I was going to call you Jill, Lisa. I don't know why.
Colorful outfit's cute.
I was at the Grand Canyon last weekend with my family, and at the top of the Grand Canyon, there's this section where it's covered with boulders, and you can see the fossil imprints of seashells.
Mm. Wow. Yep. That's great. And that's done on purpose, that they made that exposed to the people.
Sort of proves the flood.
I mean, obviously, it happened, but it's what I'm saying is they're not covering it up.
It's there.
Right.
Yeah.
But that's wonderful that the public can see it, and nobody is hiding.
Attention.
Yeah. So I didn't know. Was that a new walkway or a new lookout?
Been there since the flood.
No, I know that. but that let's shall we say exhibit that's being presented. You know, that's being highlighted because it sounds like it is.
There's a trail that goes around the canyon, and you're just hiking the trail, and you happen to look down, and there's the imprints of seashells.
That's great.
So you know what's interesting too, when you're up there, they said I saw a documentary, and they said if you look at the layers of Grand Canyon, across the way, if it was over time, just time, it would be kind of like this, but it's layered evenly like this. Is it perfect layers? We've all seen this Genesis, what's that kind of thing I saw? But it's evenly layered, just like this, like it was just perfectly laid, because it all happened catastrophic at a moment's notice. You can see it there as well. Pretty interesting.
And there are some fossils where there's a fossil of a fish eating another fish. So talk about catastrophic at a single, you know, at a time frame that wasn't lengthened. So it's beautiful. It's God's plan. But you think a flood like that is beautiful, but we're going to talk about that. Rob?
I was just going to say that all of us, from our birth until we became educated believers, had been bombarded with what I'm going to call Satan's message that the flood isn't real through the media and society in general. And if it was the other way around, where people were bombarded with the truth, the scientific and evidential truth, granted, that doesn't necessarily mean that there'd be that many more believers. But, you know,
it wouldn't hurt, right?
I mean, talk about propaganda. It's one of the ultimate propagandas that's just been dumped on all of us forever.
I checked out, I Googled something about the flood, and first thing that popped up was Wikipedia. And, you know, anybody can contribute, but it stated the mythological flood right out. And it continued to use that terminology. Richard?
My idea that now that there's an Ark of the Covenant, there's a mercy seat on that, so Jesus sitting on that, that's kind of like a saving ark, and this other ark, if you're not within Christ, you will likewise perish. I don't know if you could draw that conclusion, but I'm just thinking.
Well, we're going to go into it more in depth in next couple weeks. Jim, did you have a comment? Oh, okay. Terry.
Yeah, there's a book that I read years ago, Christian, about called the Genesis Flood.
By Morris.
That's a documentary.
Morris Whitcomb.
It's a great book.
There's also a documentary, you can get the CD on.
Dr. Walter Brown's book, and if you read his book, he will go with you and he will hike the Grand Canyon with you and show you things like.
Not currently, though. He's probably not doing that now.
He probably would.
Okay.
He's 82, I think.
Okay.
But he.
If you don't know Dr. Brown, you need to meet him. He currently attends Reformed Living Bible Church, where John Politon is the pastor.
You'll have to ask him.
Yeah.
I would love for him to come and give us a talk on it.
Yeah.
Because he just...
Well, he gives seminars, you know.
He doesn't anymore.
Okay. A talk then. We'll ask him for a talk. Yeah. So what we need to do as believers and students of the Word, we need to know what has already transpired in the book of Genesis. That's the backdrop. So we need to see the flood against the backdrop of sin, against the backdrop of a fallen world that is continuing. It continued to spiral down quite quickly. And the promise, we need to read about the flood against the promise of the seed of the woman who would destroy the enemy. We need to see the flood behind the backdrop of spiritual warfare and against the backdrop of the two groups of people that are in the world that we talked about last week, the righteous and the wicked. Conflict exists. Conflict came about, Genesis 3:15. And it's because man wasn't satisfied with all God had given man, and they wanted more. That's what it boils down to, and so they rebelled against God. Richard?
Something that relates Jesus to the flood would be Psalm 88. Your wrath lies heavy upon me, and you overwhelm me with all your waves. I think you can make an association.
Well, Jesus is the creator. All things were created by him and for him. He is before all things.
And he's subject to the wrath. And there's a scripture in Psalms of waves and like you're being flooded. And that's on a cross experience.
Yeah.
And there's no...
Even the pitch that was used that God told Moses, right, Kathy, Noah to use in the ark, the pitch, the word, the root word for pitch is kapora, which means a covering, okay? And, you know, you have Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, and so there is a connection. And there are some more, too, that, like I said, we'll get into more next week. But we want to read a few passages and find out about the cause of the flood. What caused the flood? That's our mission today. So in your handout, we read Genesis 6:5 through 7. It says, "Then the Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth." Like it hadn't been before? It had been. We were reading about Cain's lineage last week. And then God says, "And that every intent of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually." That says to me, no aspect of man's nature has not been corrupted by sin. And the Lord, now this grabs me, and the Lord was sorry. And that word in the Hebrew is nachma, which means to be sorrowful. That he had made man on the earth, and he was grieved. And etzah is the Hebrew word for grieved, and it means pained, hurt. He was hurt in his heart. There are times when we look at that verse and we think, well, God was sorry, so he changed his mind. God never changes his mind. I am the Lord, I change not, Malachi 3:6 says. So we have to see this as he was sorrowful at man's condition. And the grief and his sorrow and his grief, I don't know about you, but it's striking to me, or it should be striking to us. This doesn't mean that God hoped for a better outcome and that he wasn't able to achieve that. No way, no how. That's not my God. My God is all-powerful, and his plan is unfolding, and it's his plan, and it will never be thwarted. He knows what is going to happen. He's omniscient, he's all-knowing, and he is love. So what this tells us about verse 6 in Genesis 6 is how the unfolding of God's plan affects him. Do we even consider that? How my life today affects God. How my thoughts today affect God. And that's deep. That's more than deep. That causes me to say, I need to walk worthy of him. I need to walk worthy. It spurs me on to please him. So then in verse 7, the Lord said, "I will destroy man whom I have created from the face of the earth, both man and beast, creeping things and birds of the air, for I am sorry, I am grieved that I have made them." Now remember, God has already, and this is in your handout, offered the promise of redemption. Okay, so we need to always keep that in our minds. And remember, another remember that's not on your handout, is that God's will is never thwarted. So, but why is there this great wickedness that is talked about in verse 5? And why does it say in verse 5 of Genesis 6, then, it says then. You always have to figure, well, what happened prior to that? What happened prior to verse 5? So, because we just jumped in reading verses 5 to 7. So let's look at Genesis 6, 1 to 4. And it says, now it came to pass. You would think that this would be the chronology. I mean, this is the chronology, but I just decided we should look at verses 5 to 7 in chapter 6. Again, to emphasize our looking at the cause of what God saw at that point in verses 5 to 7. So, 1 to 4 in Genesis 6. Now, it came to pass when men began to multiply on the face of the earth, just like God had told them to do, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth, okay? And then it says, and daughters were born to them, that the sons of God saw the daughters of men, that they were beautiful. Oh, I just thought of something else too there. That's interesting. And they took wives for themselves of all whom they chose. And that all seems to be a widespread all choice. Verse 3 talks about the results. And the Lord said, my spirit shall not strive with man forever, for he is indeed flesh. And wonder what happened, because God said, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. And it's interesting that daughters were born to them, but the sons of the daughter of God saw the daughters of men. Just, you know, ponder that. So God says, again, my spirit shall not strive or plead with man forever, for he is indeed flesh, yet his days shall be 120 years. And Abilene had a question about that last week, and we were at the end of the time, so I said homework was to figure out what 120 years referred to. So did anybody check that out?
We fail.
Oh, and you weren't even here though, Lisa. So you get a waiver there. Now, the 120 years, this is not man's lifespan. It's not man's lifespan, because how old was Abraham? Abraham, who wasn't born yet. He died at 175. Okay? Isaac died at 180. And Jacob died at 130. He wasn't eating enough yogurt or something, or flaxseed. I don't know. But this action that we just read in verse 2 doesn't please God. Doesn't please God. The 120 years might be the time from this point, from this announcement that God is giving man to respond, to turn from wickedness. All right? So what say you? Comments on that?
I don't think we can know.
Because there's nothing other than 120 years. There is some evidence in 1 Peter, but I'm not going to go there yet, okay? Let's look at verse 4. There were giants on the earth in those days. And also afterward, when the sons of God came in to the daughters of men, and they bore children to them. Those were the mighty men who were of old, men of renown. How many have read that before? How many have passed it by? Okay, what have you come up with? What do you think this is about? Any observations? Mm-hmm. Beth?
I think so. Sons of God are the Shem's line, Abel's line, and the sons of daughters of man are Cain's.
Okay, so Abel's line, because some do believe that these are, that there's a contrast here. There's something going on here. And that some think that it's the Sethites, because Seth was appointed after Abel. Sethites and the Canaanites, not Canaanites, Cainites. This was the contrast between those two lines. That is a view. Lisa?
I'm more of a rookie, but I'll tell you what I heard in a sermon one time, that this the sons of God were the fallen angels, and they're the Nephilim, and that was Satan's way of using spiritual warfare to make impure the genealogy of Jesus so that the Messiah would come.
And that's another view. Yeah, that's definitely another view.
But are angels without male or female?
But when they come to Earth, but when they come to Earth, we only see that we see Gabriel and Michael. We know those two names of angels. So
but
they're seen as a male.
Demons possess bodies as they choose.
Yeah, demons can possess bodies. Rob?
I was going to say that my theory is that since we're so close to chronologically when man was kicked out of Eden, that the Earth was still... this is pre-flood. It's pretty pristine, and I think that the food that they would eat would give them better nutrition than we would get now. Things were, you know, closer to perfect, and so people grew bigger.
Okay. Oh, okay. And it's not that close, but Adam and Eve, we never get an idea about their stature, their height. It's not talked about. Interesting, especially that Nephilim, and we're going to look at what that means, and then we're going to see, we're going to look at what is talked about concerning Goliath and some of the other giants. It's a different word in the Hebrew, all right? And Nephilim doesn't even mean stature. It doesn't mean height. And as far as close to the kicking out, we do have to consider in the mix came Methuselah. So at least we're 969 years, you know, past. And Methuselah was the son of Lamech, who was the son of Jared. And you've got these lengthening lifespans. Jill, did you have a comment?
No, I have the same theory that it was fallen angels.
But. Okay. Yeah, because those are the theories, but I'm going to throw another one into the mix. But Rob, your point was that there were giants on the earth prior to the flood. That's what.
That's an idea.
Well, but that's what the text says, that there were giants, but we need to figure out what the word giant means. So some say that it's the sons of God were the godly Sethites, and the daughters of men, oh, this is interesting, were the Cainites, okay? And some say the Nephilim were the fallen angels who possessed men and had sexual relations with the women, human women on Earth.
It okay. still have to be the Cainite men or women. If they were possessed, because if they were of the godly line, they could not be possessed.
That's a good point, and I never thought of it. If they would or were of a godly line, they could not be possessed. But the men were possessed, but they had the relations with the women, human women. So, okay. But there's another view, and the view is that these were a bunch of kings who wanted to build a harem. I kid you not. Okay. So, any other observations, thoughts about this before we move on? Because we're going to look at a lot more. Bobby.
Our son shared with us once, and this is going to be a little patchy because I don't remember all the details. But he read some things about how the lifespan in the past was much longer than it is today, and that there's some sort of experiment or something where with ultraviolet lights and whatnot, and they got tomatoes to grow like, you know, the size of basketballs and thing. And then he alluded in that same experiment, again, I have no idea who did this. We'll have to get Jared here.
It's probably that Ken Hovind
about
person.
Animals, specifically lizards, and that lizards, if given enough time, just keep growing, growing. And all of a sudden, somebody's going to interject, wait a minute, growing lizards, dinosaurs?
Yeah.
I'm not proposing any of that to be true. Just just there's been some experimentation along that line that could support it.
But I don't want to get into dinosaurs right now.
Well,
but
no,
you're talking
growing,
right?
That's where I'm going.
Right. So you're bouncing off what Rob said. Okay. I am of my view is today that the intermarriage that caused this unique catastrophic flood, global flood, was between fallen angels and human women. Because think of the magnitude of the flood, and if it, the massive upheaval. If it was just between believers and non-believers, I'll just let you fill in the blank. Would that cause a catastrophic flood over the whole earth? In fact, turn to Genesis 7, 17 to 20. And we're going to look further into this. I'm not just leaving it. This is my opinion and goodbye. But Genesis 7, 17 to 20 is a verse that, a passage that is good for us to take note of, especially when we get into conversations with many people about, well, it's all mythology, and if there was a flood, it wasn't universal, it wasn't global. So this says, now the flood was on the earth 40 days. The waters increased and lifted up the ark, and it rose high above the earth. The waters prevailed and greatly increased on the earth, and the ark moved about on the surface of the waters. And the waters prevailed exceedingly on the earth, and all the high hills under the whole heaven were covered. The waters prevailed 15 cubits upward, and the mountains were covered. Amazing. Praise God for that passage, too. You know, we can stand on God's truth that it indeed was a global flood. But again, the question, why would God bring the earth such total destruction? And the New Testament weighs in on this, and it's in your handout. I'm not going to get to it yet. We'll look at it further. Let's look a little bit more at Genesis 6, 1 through 4. It says, now it came to pass when men began to multiply in the face of the earth. Okay, we read that already. The Hebrew word for men is a generic word. It includes both male and female. And it says, again, the sons of God saw the daughters of men, that they were beautiful, and they took wives for themselves of all whom they chose. Widespread choosing, as I mentioned before, seems to be the purpose. There's no distinction made between the Sethites or the Cainites at this point. And I thought, you know what, it would behoove me to check out the word took. Blue Letter Bible, which is the lexicon, part of it says took means to take, to capture. It could mean to capture, it could mean to seize, it could mean to possess. And it appears that taking all these women seems to be a selfish pursuit on their part. But here, more than anything that I just said, is the sons of God in Genesis 6:2 is the Hebrew B'nai Ha Elohim, and it's a reference to the angels. Those who fell with Lucifer and those who did not fall with Lucifer. It's a reference to angels in general. You know from reading Job, Job 1:6, that God's court, the heavenly court, was held. And this is the realm of the angels. The sons of God came to God, including Satan. Okay, we see the same in Job 2, verse 1. And the way your handout is laid out when we looked at Job 38, 1 to 7 on page 1 of your handout. We read in verse 7, the morning stars sang together and all the sons of God shouted for joy. And that has reference to the angelic realm. Man was not created as yet. And sons refer to being directly created by God. Now, in your handout, it might say in parentheses, both fallen and the holy angels. That does not mean that God created fallen angels. That was their choice when Lucifer decided his choice to be prideful and to be like God, and he took a third of the angels with them. Now, it's interesting that the Septuagint translates sons of God as angels of God. And you know what the Septuagint is, right? Septuagint is the Greek translation of the Hebrew scriptures. If you ever see this in your Bible someplace as a note, that's talking about the Septuagint. And Alexander the Great commissioned, well, he wanted the whole world speaking Greek. So he commissioned, tradition says, 72 rabbis to translate the Hebrew scriptures into Greek, into the Greek language. And that's where I said the Septuagint, which means 70. I don't know where they got the 72. That's 70 in Roman numerals, but yet tradition says that 72 rabbis were commissioned to do this translation. So, but that translation, Septuagint, sees sons of God as they write it, angels of God. So I'm suggesting again that the contrast is between the fallen angels and humanity. And the context of this 6:1-4 gives us the cause for the flood, right? Because after 6:1-4, we got 5-7, and then God says what he's going to do, right? Questions, comments, concerns, Terry, and then Barbara?
My question is about the sons of God and the angels. Does that
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So
they can
take a physical form.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you couldn't wrestle with it.
Right, right. They do take a physical form. Mm-hmm. And I believe that angel that Jacob wrestled with was a pre-incarnate appearance of Jesus. Because angel means messenger. And we have an angel of the Lord that we see consistently. And again, we talked about that when we were studying the glory of God. Seems to be a pre-incarnate, pre-Bethlehem appearance of Jesus. But yeah, they can take forms, definitely. Anything? Oh, Barbara?
Well, doesn't this, the bottom line go back to God just caused the flood to happen because God's DNA was destroyed? And then I've been reading a lot about what's going to cause the rapture and the end of the world. And they said it's when people start messing with God's DNA and trying to change mankind and into this and make them this and change their, you know, what kind of baby you want in the future and changing all of this. It has to do with God's DNA. And that's what's going to cause the... I mean, I'm just saying that's what I've been reading.
Well, and that's what Lisa mentioned, too,
yeah,
from that sermon that you heard, that Satan wanted to pollute the world.
Yeah.
And you think he was happy about what God... proclaimed in Genesis 3:15 that he would receive a mortal wound.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, he'd have followers, it says in that verse too, but that wasn't making him do somersaults. You know, he wanted to prevent the seed of the woman from coming into the world and taint the whole world.
That's interesting that the God, the people, these experts are saying that, prophecy experts are saying that that was going to cause the world to end is the messing with God's DNA.
Mm-hmm.
You know, humans, us.
Mm-hmm. And that the rapture is going to happen in God's time.
Right, right.
And God has already said that there would be 7 years of tribulation. That would be the time of Jacob's trouble. So there's a purging reason too for the tribulation.
Right.
Yeah, and of Israel to prepare them for their Messiah. Rob, is that your hand?
Yeah. I was just going to say that since, as far as we know, angels were created before mankind.
Yes.
And angels are obviously lower than God. The other thing that we think that we know is that angels are all, so to speak, male. In other words, we never hear about a female angel.
Well, yeah, that's what Beth was.
Why would God create angelic beings all male? Why would they even have the ability to procreate?
But they don't. They don't.
Okay.
That's why.
They take over a human body.
They take over the women.
Yeah.
So let's go with that. Let's pretend that a fallen angel overtook Craig, and then Craig has relations with somebody. How is his DNA all of a sudden going to make giants? That doesn't make sense.
Well, that's what we're going to talk about, okay? The word giants is in the text. And in fact, let's look at more of the result. Look at verse 4, and it's in your handout. Whoa, Frida?
Real opinions about the giants. Because what Clint says is there were giants in those days, but then also after that, when the sons of God came to blah, blah, blah. So it's, to me, it sounds like there were a bunch of giants, or not a bunch, but there were giants, and then time passed. How much time was that? And then the sons of God came down.
No, it's all in that span of time. Okay, that's, there were giants on the earth. That's where we're going next in verse 4. Okay, in those days that God is addressing at this point, those days that something great wickedness came upon man and God was going to put an end to it. And so let's, again, there were giants on the earth in those days and also afterward, comma, when was afterward? When the sons of God came into the daughters of men and they bore children to them. The children are the results of the intermarriage. And those, the children, were the mighty men who were of old, that means they were past, in the past, they were men of renown. And renown in Hebrew means conspicuous position, all right? Giants. In the Hebrew, the word is Nephilim, like Lisa said before. And Nephilim means fallen ones, okay? So the giants were the fallen ones. The time frame here is all, and that was a good question, Frida. Didn't it happen prior to? It did happen prior to, but we don't know how long, how much prior to. But it wasn't, but there was a time when it started. And it, that time frame is during this intermarriage and not after the flood. I've heard some lessons given on how there were Nephilim, and I mentioned this a little bit before. There were Nephilim, the fallen ones, after the flood. Then my first question is, well, then I guess God's flood didn't take care of the problem. Yeah, and I'm not going there because it did. It did work. And so I started looking up the words for the different giants afterwards, like Goliath. And there was a valley of the Rephaim. Rephaim means giants, but they, that word in the Hebrew, Rephaim, means of great stature. This giant does not mean great stature, it means fallen one. So there's a big difference right there. And again, people would ask how, so we've already addressed that. Demon possession, angels taking the form of men and engaging in sexual relations with which produce the Nephilim, okay? I know that MacArthur, in his notes, and you know I have a MacArthur reference Bible, says that the offspring of this union were not the Nephilim, but it doesn't jive with how I'm reading. I believe the offspring were the Nephilim, okay? All right, we're getting to the end of it. That's good.
I just wanted to say Webster's, their first definition of giant is a legendary human-like.
Oh, that's what I was going to say.
Human-like being, of great stature and strength. Human-like is specifically.
That's interesting. Read it again, Sharon. And this is Webster.
Yeah, first definition, a legendary human-like being of great stature and strength.
Okay, let me, but legendary.
Right, and right. Human-like.
Yeah, and human-like. Well, think of what was produced. And what I was going to go into was that the word Nephilim, fallen one, is seen as meaning titan in some of the translations. Half man, half God. Okay. So that's where the DNA was really messed up, because what was produced was half man, half like a god. What does an angel have in terms of DNA? You know, so it wasn't completely human. Just a second, Richard. And legendary, think of what has come from this, perhaps. The mythology that we read about within the Greek culture and other cultures, you know, they took it off and ran with this. But this is what was happening. But the flood came about. The flood came about and wiped that out. So we don't find this in those giants that come up in Scripture. Check out your lexicon. It's Rephaim, and it means of great stature. Doesn't talk about mighty men of renown. Another word for mighty is Gibborim. And they had some kind of, I'm going to say supernatural, because it was angels coming alongside and having union with humans. It was supernatural, and not in a good way. Beth?
I don't understand how a possessed person can transfer DNA from its possession.
I don't know either. I don't either, but Craig has the answer.
We're talking about God and angels are spirit beings, correct?
Yes.
Do they have DNA?
I don't know. Exactly. But yeah, but it's polluted nonetheless. But whatever.
Why would a spirit being have DNA? Isn't that a physical property?
I don't know. But whatever was the result, we're reading it here in verses 4 and on, or just verses 4. That they were the mighty men who were of old, men of renown, and these were titans. These were half and half. They were half angels, half men. Lisa?
Maybe something to consider with DNA is that DNA is a language.
Okay. Expound, because that's good.
Yeah, so just like what you were saying about messing with the DNA, it's messing with the language.
The chain that's running through
it. Yeah, it's the language of how everything goes together. So
that's good.
DNA coming into a body can perhaps obstruct the language of what actually happens.
Okay, good. Thanks, Lisa. I like that. Yeah, Rob?
Is there any scriptures that lead us to think that post-flood God somehow changed it so that angels couldn't do the same thing that they had done pre-flood?
Yep, and we're going there right now. Okay, and your handout. How does the New Testament speak to this? Okay, 2 Peter 2, 4 to 5. This speaks, you cannot deny that this passage speaks of angels in Noah's days. You found on your handout? Okay. For if God, page 3, thank you. For if God did not spare the angels, and he didn't spare them, there's the answer to your question right there. God did not spare the angels who sinned, but cast them down to hell and delivered them into chains of darkness to be reserved for judgment, and did not spare the ancient world, but saved Noah, one of 8 people, a preacher of righteousness, bringing in the flood, and God brought in the flood on the world of the ungodly. Whoa, that tells us there's a connection between these angels who sinned with the flood, and these angels who sinned are now in chains. Let me ask you, are there demons floating around?
Yeah.
Yeah. So they're not the same angel. I'm sorry?
Our fight isn't against flesh and blood.
Right. And that DNA, I'm thankful, Lisa, for what you said, because I don't have the answers regarding DNA, and I don't know what those, it would be interesting, Barbara, what you're reading, if they give a little bit more about how DNA has changed. Not that, are these believers that are saying this prophecy?
Oh, yeah, these are all prophecy, you know, experts.
But if they have anything more in depth on DNA that they're talking about, it would just be interesting to read, okay?
Well, with what's going on in the world today about, you know, people trying to change the...
cloning and all that jazz, everything.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Implanting, like, computer chips in the soldiers, making them superhuman.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So, okay, so let's...
I see what you're saying.
Yeah, okay. 2 Peter 2, 4, and 5, though. Do you see how that's connected to the flood? Do you see how these angels are now in chains, but they're not all the angels, because we've got demons. There were demons. Oh, look at the demonic activity in Jesus' day. It was intense. Look at Jude verses 6 and 7. and the angels, okay, which ones? Who did not keep their proper domain, and I put in parens, these angels are spirit beings, okay? Or keep in mind that angels are spirit beings. But they left their own abode. This is what Jude is talking about, certain angels who left their own abode. What, how did they do that? They took on human flesh, going out, and they went after human flesh. God has reserved in everlasting chains under darkness for the judgment of the great day. And then he makes a comparison, Jude does, with Sodom and Gomorrah. He's comparing Sodom and Gomorrah with the angel activity, okay, in Genesis 6. And the cities around them, around Sodom and Gomorrah, in similar manner, what was happening there, they were giving themselves over to sexual immorality. And just as in Sodom and Gomorrah and those cities, these fallen angels gave themselves over to sexual immorality. And in Sodom and Gomorrah, they went after strange flesh. You remember that when the angels came to Sodom and Gomorrah and the men of Sodom and Gomorrah wanted to have relations with the angels, okay? So here the comparison is, well, yeah, the angels in Noah's day went after human women. And this is set forth as an example, suffering the vengeance of eternal fire. So do they, these two passages, if they're not talking about the flood, but they are, because it references the flood. And it, to me, it verifies what we just read in Genesis 1 through 4, that it, the contrast here is between the angels, or the relationship is between the angels and humanity. And Satan's desire was to pollute the world.
I see a note that says, for unnatural, flesh, in Greek could be other flesh.
Yeah,
definitely,
okay.
Other flesh, angel of some sort, and yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that's in your reference Bible, your note?
It's ESV, and it's a number one, Greek, other flesh.
Okay, okay. So Satan is bent on canceling out the promise of God in Genesis 3:15. So how do we understand this? What is the positive that we can come away with? Now, don't think it's mind over matter that I'm talking about or anything like that, or it's thinking positive, be positive and you'll be okay. Do you get that a lot from people? I'm not talking that way, but who is our God? God is faithful, he's gracious, he's good, he's loving, he's merciful, he's just, he's holy, and we have to always remember that. And look what was going on in the world. If it was indeed the angels with the humans. And consider this, you were talking about it at the very beginning, the beauty of the world that we have now. We have such a preponderance of evidence about the universal flood, don't we? I mean, think of it. Books have been written about the fossil evidence, the strata, and how it's laid down, how it was reorganized by the flood. Doesn't that give glory to God? That what we're reading this in the Bible, and this supports who our God is. And it's majestic, and we're looking at such beauty. Can you imagine the beauty that God has for us in the millennial kingdom and then in the eternal state? Richard?
This messing with the flesh of that the Messiah would come in. Maybe Satan had a hope that, well, if he's going to save man, say we could put angel stuff in the mix, and his death would be valuable for angels too. Just a thought that just came by.
Okay, Richard. Richard is always thinking.
Yeah. He goes.
Patty.
Oh, I just wanted to read what my Ryrie Bible says about healing, from a root word meaning to fall.
You're talking about what Nephilim or what giants means?
To fall upon others, because these individuals were men of strength. Only other use of this Hebrew word is in Numbers 13:33. Evidently, they were in the earth before the marriages of Genesis 6:2.
When you go, it's true that Numbers 33 is the only other one that, in fact, is it Numbers 33? Let's turn to it.
Numbers 13:33.
Oh, okay. Numbers 13. That makes more sense, because that's the spies going into the promised land. The spies, Numbers 13:33. The spies, did they have good things to say about the promised land? No. Huh?
Wouldn't they say they weren't there giants?
Yeah, there were giants, and that word is Nephilim. That word is Nephilim in Numbers 13:33. And that, but they now they were of tall stature. That was Rephaim, okay? But the reference that Patty shared with us is Nephilim. But it has been thought that these, I mean, they were blowing things up. They were blowing things out of proportion, the spies were. So again, if the Nephilim, I'm asking you guys, if the Nephilim were causing the cause of the flood and they weren't wiped out, what does that say about God? It didn't work. And I, again, I'm not going to go there with God. Rob?
Didn't the spies also have to put a pole between the cluster of grapes because it was so big?
Yeah.
In other words, we start getting this image in our mind of yes. big things.
Right. Right. And yet, Nephilim means fallen ones. It doesn't have anything to do in the definition about their height. Yeah. Bobby?
I find a strange dichotomy. Scripture continually talks about using fire to purge and to cleanse. Here, God used water.
I know. But he's going
to
use fire in the future, and that's the why the covenant, you know, with Noah and the world, that this will never happen again. A flood will never destroy. But we know that from 2 Peter 3, that fire will destroy the earth.
Well, I know throughout Scripture it's highlighted.
Yeah.
I'm saying it's a strange dichotomy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Craig?
I think from listening to all this, one thing we have to consider is that, like Frankie Freddy in this present darkness, there's a lot going on that we don't see, we
yeah.
don't understand,
yeah.
and we just got to trust God. We don't have mm-hmm. the rest of the story.
Yeah, that's great.
If
just
you
like
make some kind of weird monster movie out of the Bible.
Yeah, yeah.
They do.
Yeah, that's true. They tried to. That's true. I don't know if you saw the Noah movie. Jared saw it, and he told Bobby, he told us, he said, don't bother. It'll only make you mad.
I would agree. But the one thing it gets right is the wickedness and evilness of man.
Uh-huh.
It really puts a perspective on this took of the women. I mean, it was evil personified, unchecked evil.
It really puts a perspective of the taking of the women. That's
yeah,
interesting.
It was scary. Like,
huh. Wow. Wow. Well, yeah, come away with that and come away with the sorrow that God, that hurt his heart. And you think of it, we're made in the image of God. We're made with will, intellect, and emotions. God has will, intellect, and emotions. So what was transpiring, we're reading about, again, as I said before, the effect on God's heart. Patty?
Well, I was just going to read what it says here on 13:33. The note says that Nephilim, in parentheses, sons of
Anak. Anakim?
What is it?
Anakim?
Anakim. Were part of the Nephilims. Anak was a tribe that lived near Hebron in southern Palestine. My real question here is about when did Palestine become
Palestine became Palestine in 135 AD when Hadrian conquered the Jews. The Jews had risen up against them, the Rome, Second Revolt, and they lost. And Hadrian said, get out of here, get out of Jerusalem, get out of Israel. And Hadrian renamed the land Palestine at that point. Why is it called Palestine back there in Numbers? That's a good question. What version, what translation do you have? No. What translation do you have? So, I would check it out. I would have you check it out.
Homework.
Homework. Homework. Check out Palestine. Yeah.
That's been my question forever.
Now, Palestine, okay, the Phoenicians, all right, is that what I want to say? Philistines. The root, Palestine comes from the root Philistines. So just check it out. But I don't have time, and you guys have to pray. So I'm stopping this.
A little bit, it comes to my mind, is that Adrian used that word to insult.